You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stockingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Back. I just want to carry on drumming, actually.
I know.
I've got it in my head.
We had a fantastic time in the first half with Mr. Phil Wilson, drumming away on our plastic buckets, hitting flamingos and elephants, and it was really good fun. Do check it out. You'll love it, and the kids will love it. And so will the corporates. The corporate kids will love it, too. Next up, I caught up with the lovely Pam Locke. Pam is the CEO of Locke Associates, and they are HR lawyers, wellbeing and mental health specialists. So I'll tell you what, shall we hear what Pam had to say?
Well, they'd love some drumming, wouldn't they?
I'm sure they
would. They'd love some drumming.
I'm sure they would. Let's hear what Pam had to say.
Yeah.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome back onto the Business Bunker Show Pam Locke of Locke Associates, the HR recruitment law and wellbeing specialists. Pam, welcome back onto the Bunker Show. It's lovely to see you again.
Thanks, Paul. It's great to see you too. Well, to speak to you too.
Yeah. So it's been a while since we last spoke, a month or so, and lots of things have been happening. One of the things I'd like to ask you about, and I'm kind of springing this on you, as it were, is IR35. A few weeks back, those of us that care about such things, we're all going, at last, they're going to change some of these stupid bonkers IR35 rules. Well, that only lasted about 2 weeks, I think, before they undid it again. So like a lot of people, I'm not really sure where we are now in terms of IR35. I mean, from my point of view, as I think you may have just guessed from my wording there, I'm not a big fan of IR35. I think it's a sledgehammer to crack a nut, and it's caused more damage than anything. I have to say, my very first business, I started as a freelance contractor. And if IR35 had existed then, none of my 9 businesses would be in existence now. But anyway, enough of my thoughts on it. Could you just give us a brief overview of where you see we are now with IR35, now they've taken it away, put it back, and what that kind of means to us?
Well, we're basically still in the same situation we were 6 months ago. So, I mean, IR35, I would agree with you. I think it's created a lot of unforeseen consequences, shall we put it that way, unintended consequences. And actually, I don't think it's really been to the benefit. I mean, what you found is people have found ways around it. I mean, there's a lot of confusion out there because IR35 rules only apply in certain circumstances. So, for example, you've got to be a business that's got 10.9 million turnover, going to have more than 50 members, 50 staff. You know, so it doesn't apply to every business across the board. But where it does apply, it does mean that you've got to effectively put the person on your payroll, so, or treat them as if they're on the payroll. Yeah. And that, I mean, I'm summarising that obviously quite a lot because it's a bit more complicated than that. But what it's meant is that larger organisations that previously would have contractors working for them have taken a pretty much a sledgehammer approach and said, we can't do that anymore. You know, we've got to operate in a different way, which has been much to the detriment of many businesses, if you want to call it that. So it's. I think it was obviously it was part of this package that the Truss quasi-card king, I don't know how you describe them, decided to bring in. I think they were described as being stupid amateurs by one economist. And obviously now that's been reversed amongst all the other things that have been reversed. So we're back in the situation where we were before.
Right. Okay.
Do I think it's going to change again? No.
Yeah.
So I haven't got a crystal ball. That's just, I mean, there are too many other things to concentrate on at the moment.
Yeah, my problem with all of this is I could never work out. Well, I know what the starting point was because I was heavily involved in it at the start. I was one of the people that gave a submission to it when they were looking at it, and the original starting point behind it was that HMRC were concerned that personal limited companies were avoiding paying national insurance. Basically,
The
answer to that was really simple. Introduce a new level of national insurance, a tier 5 national insurance for private, for personal limited companies. But no, they chose to go the difficult route. And I think it's morphed away now from being just about collecting tax that's due into actually trying to stop people working freelance when they feel that they should be permanent. And I'm not really sure whose benefit that is, but there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of anomalies in the system, let's put it that way. Mm. I mean, I used to work in pensions years ago, and I remember they brought in what they called the simplification rules, which just made the whole thing more complicated than it needed to be. And I feel that we're in the same sort of zone here.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of other, you know, I mean, they bring in one rule to deal with one thing, which, I mean, I guess what you call is disguised remuneration. They're trying to avoid a situation where actually, if the person was employed, they'd be getting a lot more money in. But yeah, actually, you know, as you say, there's a different way you could have approached it. But there's so many other anomalies in the system that are not being addressed.
Yeah.
You know, and it sometimes takes case law to sort of deal with those anomalies. So, you know, for example, you know, you had the Uber drivers, Pimlico plumbers, you know, yeah, they've all ended up in tribunals challenged by the workers over how they were treated. But actually, HMRC could easily have addressed that as well, because they were not getting in the revenue they would have been getting had these people been getting treated as employees or workers. Yeah. So there's, you know, there is a, I have significant difficulties with the way that HMRC decide to tackle things. And as you say, the approaches they take are not always the simplest ones, but not also the most effective ones.
Yeah. Absolutely. And as you say, a lot of this has now come down to case law. You know, there's been two or three tribunals that I've seen over the last couple of years where it's gone to court to try and decide whether someone is an employee or not, which, I mean, it's just, from my point of view, it's just bonkers. So it's just plain and simple bonkers. And as you quite rightly say, with so many of these bits of legislation, the law of unintended consequences quite often kicks in, but people don't seem to be able to back away from it. You know, people harden their views on it because, you know, they've got one point of view on it and that's it. And, you know, I despair sometimes of how these things happen. But we are back to where we were before. So there's kind of, it's all the same, no change, but it's different. And I kind of agree with you. I don't think it's going to be changing again anytime soon. Back the other way. Okay. So that's IR35. But it is something that it primarily affects bigger businesses in terms of the rule changes. But of course, yeah, even as smaller businesses, we have to be wary of whether someone is IR35 connected or not, if we're going to hire them, does it not?
Well, not unless you've got more than 50 employees and your turnover is higher than 10.9 million. So it doesn't apply to all businesses. But I mean, what you've got to be wary of as a smaller business is whether you're taking on somebody who's a genuine consultant, self-employed person,
yeah,
or self-employed entity. Yeah. Now, obviously, that's where service companies become a more attractive entity for a smaller business, because obviously if it's a limited company that's employing the individual and you're engaged in the limited company to supply the services, then obviously that reduces the risk that the individual could at the end of the day, when you terminate the contract, turn around and say, well, actually, you employed me. So yeah, there is an attraction there, obviously, by dealing with service companies. So, you know, as I said earlier, there are certain rules. IR35 only kicks in once you meet all of those sort of requirements.
Mm.
But if you're recruiting people and employing people directly, self-employed consultants, it's important that you get a contract in place. And quite often that can be a freelancer agreement or a consultancy agreement, but you must have something out there that sets out what the position is between the two parties. So everybody's clear. So there's, you know, because that's the first thing HMRC will look at and say, what's the position, or a tribunal, because there's two different ways you could get attacked here. One is from the tax side and one is from the employment rights and workers' rights perspective.
Yeah.
So you need to have that first of all. And, you know, we find a lot of clients, you say, oh, it's a mate, we're fine. That's great when it all works out. When it falls apart, that's when you want to find the document that says, no, actually, this is what we agreed. Yeah. But on a day-to-day basis, you must treat consultants, contractors differently to your employee staff. That does mean, you know, you shouldn't really be inviting them to your Christmas nights out.
Yeah.
You should be treating them differently. It's difficult because, you know, you often want an email address that everybody's got so it all looks like you're all part of the same team. Yeah. But that's when you start getting into this sort of muddy ground of actually, are they workers, are they employed, or actually are they self-employed? So it's quite, it's a difficult balance to keep and get right.
Absolutely. And then added to that, you've also got a lot of contractors now that, as you referred to earlier, people have tried to find ways around this legislation and now work for umbrella companies.
And there's obviously, I mean, we're beginning to see some challenges again with HMRC around umbrella companies as to whether, you know, that's the legitimate tax, you know, whether they're operating legitimately and whether they're exposed from a tax perspective as well. So there's a lot to go. There's a road to run here. We're going to see some case law coming out in the next year, without a doubt, that's going to sort of tease out what actually, whether they actually can legitimately engage these individuals and remove them from the IR35 rules effectively.
And I've also come across quite a few umbrella companies that are based in the Isle of Man and the Channel Islands and stuff like that. So it becomes a tax avoidance kind of thing as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, a lot of them are taking professional advice and they try to rely on that. But we're beginning to see, you know, cases coming through where they're saying, well, actually, you know, you can't really say just because you took professional advice that you've not, you can get off with tax avoidance or evasion. So, I think it's watch the space. There's definitely going to be quite a lot of developments in this area in the next year.
Yeah, it's just, you know, funny you should mention taking professional advice. The people suffering from the loan charge at the moment took professional advice and that didn't help a lot. So anyway, we won't go there. Okay, Pam, what are some of the other things that are coming across your desk at the moment that you're seeing that you think that our smaller business people need to be aware of?
Well, there's quite a lot of chat about blackouts, potentially. Yep. What would happen, you know, if we do end up with blackouts and your staff can't work? I mean, that's going to be challenging for some businesses, especially if they don't have layoff clauses in their contracts.
Yeah.
So I think it's worth reviewing your contracts and getting layoff clauses in that. Now, a layoff clause is basically giving you the right as an employer to temporarily lay off your staff.
Right.
And you have to pay them a guaranteed amount, which is only about £30 a day, up to a certain amount of days. So it's not paying them, you know, huge amounts of money, but it does mean that you don't have to then pay somebody if there's a blackout, if you can lay them off.
Right.
And obviously, to be able to lay them off, you need to have notification about the blackout, obviously. But you actually could lay them off immediately if you did have a blackout, as long as you covered that off in your contract. So it's really important you have that contractual right to do that. Yeah. Without that contractual right, if we have a blackout and your staff can't work safely, then you would have to send them home and you would have to pay them unless they're on a 0 hours contract.
Yep.
So I think it's worth thinking about. Simply, I'm not saying, obviously I don't want to be a doomsday person here, but there's a possibility we might have blackouts. So it's always worth thinking ahead to protect your business.
Yeah.
Other things that we're sort of seeing, well, we're hearing a lot about quiet quitting.
Right.
Which, if you've been around for a while, which I know you and I have, we would know as working to rule. But it's now got this fancy new name called quiet quitting. But basically, we've got people that are demotivated, not happy doing what they're doing. And instead of trying to get another job, they're sitting there just quietly, basically. I suppose you could say they're in a bit of a huff, but they're just doing the basic minimum.
Yeah.
And you're getting, you know, nothing out of them. And obviously the other side of it is what we're now hearing about is quiet firing, which again is a concept that's been around for many years, which is basically where somebody sort of sends somebody to Coventry, sort of speaking to them, you know, doesn't, you know, they sort of don't allow them to be treated in a nice way. They sort of basically just treat them in the minimum way they need to treat them as in the employer. And so the person effectively is sort of getting sidelined and moved on. Now, again, this concept's been around for years. I mean, there was one very large global company that used to treat their staff, well, if they found that they didn't want to retain a member of staff, they would put them in the basement with no windows with a really horrible job to do.
I've been there.
You've been there, yeah.
I've been there.
It happened a lot in the, I'm going to say the 80s, but you can correct me. But it used to happen a lot in the 80s and early 90s. Now, obviously, as an employer, you need to be careful because there's this thing called a mutual trust, a duty of mutual trust and confidence. So you can't treat staff badly. First of all, you've got a duty to care, to look after their health and safety. So you need to make sure you don't put them somewhere that's not safe. But secondly, you've got this duty of mutual trust and confidence. So you can't go around treating them badly, because then the individual could resign and claim constructive dismissal if they've got more than 2 years service. But, you know, it's basically a way of making somebody feel like they're not welcome. Yeah. And as a result, the individual then gets the message and leaves. Now, the thing I found over the years is that doesn't happen like it used to happen. People don't leave unless they, you know, more often than not, they get pushed. Yeah. And there's two reasons for that. One is we have a lot of people that can't make decisions themselves, which means that they won't make a decision themselves. They have to have somebody else to help make that decision. And the other thing is you've got insurance policies, which mean that, for example, like income protection, if somebody leaves the job voluntarily, they won't necessarily get the cover under their policy. And likewise, for benefits, the, you know, if they leave a job, the benefits agency will turn around and say, well, actually, if you left voluntarily, you might not qualify for benefits. So there's, you know, I've come across situations where the, you know, individuals have been advised that they need to be dismissed.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way they're going to get the benefits. So it's an interesting scenario in that we've got these two developing features, but actually, as I say, they've actually always been with us.
Yeah. It's, yeah, absolutely. I personally suffered that many years ago. As you say, back in the 80s, I fell out with a boss and I went on holiday. And when I came back, my office had been moved to the basement. I had no telephone and my secretary had been reassigned.
Wow.
Yeah, it was good. I kind of lasted 6 months thinking, do you know what? This is great. I haven't got to do anything. I'm just gonna, as long as I come in on time and go home on time and they're going to pay me, I'm just going to sit here and read books, which is what I did for 6 months, but I got bored after that and left. But
so you're a classic example of quiet firing and quiet fitting, but in the opposite sort of, you know.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, it's one of these quiet firing, I think you've got to be very, very careful about, because you've also got to remember other people are watching how you're treating somebody.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, if somebody, and that actually, some employers like that, because what they think is that sends out the message to somebody else, you know, don't mess with me.
Yeah.
You know, so there can be, you know, but you've got to think about how your actions are being perceived by other people. Mm. And we're still in an environment where it's really tough to recruit people. I mean, yeah. Excuse me, one of the things that we're noticing is we're getting more immigration inquiries coming in.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Because clients are now finding it so difficult to recruit in the UK.
Absolutely. They have made some changes to the skilled workers visa as well, haven't they? I noticed that they've included chefs now as skilled workers, and they've also lowered the requirements in some cases. But I think, if I remember rightly, a while back you had to have a salary of over 35K or whatever it was. And for some classifications of jobs, they've reduced that a bit. But you're right, you know. But it's interesting as well. I was looking at some statistics the other day about the hospitality industry, which was particularly badly hit by the lack of overseas staff and Brexit and all the rest of it. And there's actually, all of a sudden, there's been a 25% increase in local staff recruitment. I think a lot of that is because they eventually coughed up the money and started paying better wages. And again, especially for chefs. I mean, in the hospitality industry, good quality chefs are like rocking horse poo. It's very, very rare and very difficult. And I know people, a friend of mine owns a small chain of hotels, and he was saying he was paying 60,000 a year for a chef, whereas... Yeah. 2 years ago, he was paying 30, and he just can't afford not to have a chef. So, you know, you've got to pay the rate. So it will be interesting to see how skilled worker visas start to unfold. But, of course, for a lot of us smaller companies, we really just don't know how to go about doing that and how to get, because you have to register and all that before you can apply to bring someone in.
Well, it's certainly something that we're happy to help with. So we, you know, and we are working with small to medium-sized businesses as well. So it's, it's, you know, I think if it's not something you've thought about doing and you're not sure what to do and you're, you know, you want to chat about it, give us a call. We'll have a chat with you about it and take you through it, because it's not as complicated as you might think it would be. Right. And it might well be the solution that works for your business. You know, and so, yeah, give us a call. We're happy to chat it through. In terms of other changes that are taking place, dumb phones, are they now the new smart choice? That's what we're asking. Because there seems to be quite a lot of people have been moving away from using the sort of all singing, all dancing phones towards the old phones. So going back to the 80s and 90s, well, 90s probably more so, a lot of people are now moving to dumb phones. So basically phones that basically just answer calls, you can text from them, that's about it.
Yeah.
And I think that's just a reflection of quite a lot of people thinking about actually whether they want to remain active on social media. I mean, I've heard a lot of people in my age group that are sort of looking at things and thinking, actually, do you know what, I've had enough of Facebook. And obviously we've seen the statistics on Facebook and the numbers are dropping off. So that's a trend that will be interesting to see if it continues. I think it probably will. And then certainly in certain age groups, I think it will be more accelerated. But yeah.
It's interesting you should say that. I think you're absolutely right. I did, I shouldn't admit this, a little while back, I did start to try and buy up loads of Nokia 3310s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the old Nokia phones. You could pick them up for 10 quid back then. And I first come across it a couple of years ago when my youngest son was going off to a festival. And I said, don't take your best smartphone, you know, it's going to end up in a puddle. It's going to be covered in beer. You're going to lose it. Why don't we just buy a pay-as-you-go SIM and a cheap phone? And I just went on, I paid 10 quid for a Nokia 3310. And then after a while of doing that, I thought, you know what? I think there's going to be a return market in these things. Because you can make a phone call, you can send a text, but you can't be tracked, and you can't have people, you know, the minute you do something, Facebook then pops up with 14,000 ads for the same thing. I mean, it's at the point now where I can't even remember sometimes that I even said something. You know, I think, did I even do that? I'm sure I just thought that, and all of a sudden you got, you know, a bunch of ads on your Facebook page for it. So I think you're right. I think, you know, that a number of people might start to look at those old-style telephones that do basic stuff.
Yeah, and I think they're good for your health as well. I mean, a brilliant idea on your part. I mean, obviously, you're way ahead of the trend. But, you know, I think from a health point of view and well-being point of view, everybody's a lot more wary about their well-being, aren't they? I mean, you know, we hear it a lot more now. And I think, you know, it does mean you can sort of, you know, if you've got the smartphone, the tendency is to look, you can't help yourself, can you?
Yeah.
Human beings, we're all curious, we want to see what's up there. If you've got the dumb phone, you can't do that. So it almost takes that away from you and actually forces you to sort of, you know, take some time out. And I think, you know, I think a lot of people like that idea. And a lot of people have been forced, I think, to go on Facebook almost by peer pressure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So it might be seen to be a bit more sort of, you know, trendy and innovative to actually take yourself off of it, or at least take yourself away from it for periods of time. Yeah. Maybe just use, you know, a smartphone for work and your dumb phone for the weekends when you feel you just need some downtime.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think all of that's really interesting and good advice. Pam, as always, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to speaking to you again in the coming weeks. But for the moment, Pam Locke of Locke Associates, thank you so much.
So that was Pam Locke of Locke Associates, and we covered so many things. I just saw a tweet from Darren Wheel saying he tuned in, and the first words he heard were IR35, which drove him bonkers. I know the feeling. What can I say? Our government hates small business. There's no other way of putting it.
I've just been tweeting about that. Hospitality, retailers, small shoe shops. Anyone who's trying to run a business now must be absolutely wringing their hands. And my hairdresser in London, his electric bill, you know, imagine all those hairdryers going, has gone up to £1,000 a month.
Yeah.
It's bonkers.
Yeah.
Electric and gas.
The idiot Hunt claims he's going to put up taxes on Thursday. I think he's going to be sorely disappointed. He might raise the tax rate, but he isn't going to make any money because everyone's going to just give up. There's no point. I mean, it's very near the knuckle now worth being in business. Yeah. If you put up the tax rates, that's it, just give up.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
And how many job vacancies are there?
11,000.
11,000.
Yeah.
But it is a shame. I mean, I love our small businesses, as you know, and if we lose them, we're going to lose all the individual stuff that we've got on the high street and stuff.
There's Kent Virtual Networking taking place on Wednesday the 30th of November. It's a virtual event and it's free to attend, and it's 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. It's hosted by Peter Searle and it's part of the FSB Connect online events, and these events are relaxed networking with like-minded business owners, and everyone is welcome. And the speaker this month is Kirsty Winter from Kent Police. If you'd like to find out more or book your place, go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar.
And there's a Marsh Network online meeting while we're chatting about them. So it's 10:30 a.m. on the 16th of November. Is that manana?
It is tomorrow, yeah.
Join organisations from Kent, Sussex and beyond for our relaxed style of professional networking. Tell us about yourself and your business or charity and how we can help and support you. The presenter will be Joe Harmsworth from On The Spot Tax, with a talk, Uncover the Secret to Managing Your Finances with Joe from On The Spot Accountants. To book, you can go to www.marshnetwork.co.uk.
Canterbury Christchurch University are holding a Christmas reception on Thursday the 1st of December. It's from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. and it's on the campus of the university at North Holmes Road in Canterbury. It's a measly £5, and it's a festive networking event overlooking the historic Augustine Abbey in Canterbury Christchurch University's new Verena Holmes building. Meet with like-minded organisations and businesses and find out how the university can support your goals with a new government-funded Help to Grow management scheme. There'll be festive drinks and nibbles for you to enjoy, all for a measly £5. If you want to find out more or book your place, kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar.
And the Kent Creative Designers and Makers Market, I like this, showing a range of products beautifully made by 22 creatives in Kent. That's a chance to talk to the makers and to buy local. It's a perfect opportunity if you're not in love with online shopping. You can go to the Turner Contemporary in Margate, 3rd of December and 4th of December of this year. And you can go and find out more by going to www.cultureinkent.org/events-designers-and-makers-christmas-market. So that's the 3rd and 4th of December. I can't believe we're nearly in December.
Absolutely.
Paul Andrews.
Absolutely. Social Enterprise Kent have a conference. This autumn, the Social Enterprise Kent are delighted to invite you to join our Buy Local, Buy Social conference. We'll be bringing together organisations from across Kent to explore the importance of buying from local businesses, social enterprises and charities. It's taking place this Friday, the 18th of November, at the Ashford International Hotel, and it's 10 till 4. Again, kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar to find out more or book your place.
And come along and meet other businesses in Sevenoaks and hear the latest updates from the leader of Sevenoaks Council, Councillor Peter Fleming. Please join us for an after-work event hosted by Sevenoaks District Council. And also in attendance will be Sevenoaks District Council officers, membership advisor Jane Martin, and many other businesses from the Sevenoaks community to network with. When is this, I hear you cry.
When is it? I cry.
It is.
I could roar. I could roar that.
You did a very good roar at the beginning of the show. Thursday, 24th of November, since you asked, Paul Andrews, and it's at 5 p.m. till 18:45, quarter to seven. The venue is at Sevenoaks District Council offices. That's in Argyle Road, Sevenoaks, T for Tango, N for Norman, 13-1 Humphrey Gherkin.
Thank you for that. Kent Women in Business Christmas Celebration. Join us and the brilliant Kent Women in Business for our Christmas celebration. There's an inspiring keynote speaker, networking and festive afternoon tea. It's taking place on the 8th of December, 11:30 till 3. And it's a Beulah Lounge at Christine House, London Road, Raynham. If you want to find out, you can go to, if you want to book your tickets, it's eventbrite.co.uk/ Kent Women in Business Christmas.
We should have had old Phil's little jingle bells and things. His percussion, he's taken it all, isn't he?
He has.
Took his elephant, his pink flamingo, and his buckets.
Yeah, absolutely.
A beachfront B&B with panoramic sea views has been booked up until 2024.
Oh, I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, after a guest TikTok video of the eye-catching pad went viral. I've never even been on TikTok.
No, not
I don't
right.
even know what it is.
Yeah.
Clips of Edgecliff Boutique B&B in Birchington, I do love Birchington, sandy beaches, you see, have racked up millions of views. It's a £250 a night guest house. It was already popular after it was featured on Channel 4's Four in a Bed in 2019. And it's owned by Neil and Marilyn Tucson, who say social media has completely changed their clientele. And they say, we're fully booked after Four in a Bed and would get a lot of continental guests. Oh, continental. Yeah. But COVID washed all that away, said Mr. Tucson. Then we had a visitor who put us on TikTok. And that generated a whole new type of guest. Now we have a lot more of a younger guest who are very heavily into social media. The couple have lived in the beach house for 20 years and have previously seen the property simply as the place in which they would enjoy retirement. So I wonder if they move out or what.
I would think so. Right, do you know what we're going to do now?
Here, another little interview.
This is the sixth and last in a series of interviews I did at the Business Terrace in Maidstone. The Business Terrace is a co-working space run by Maidstone Borough Council. And to round off the series, I've interviewed over the last few weeks a number of the tenants. To round off the series, I spoke with Alexa Kirsting Woods, who's the property manager for Maidstone Borough Council. So let's hear what Alexa had to say.
Lovely, I can't wait. Yeah, you've been a busy bee with all these interviews.
I have, they've been fantastic. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Let's hear what Alexa had to say.
I'm now joined on the Business Bunker show by Alexa Kirsting Wood. Alexa is the property manager here at Maidstone Borough Council. Good afternoon, Alexa. Thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon. Thanks for inviting me along.
It's an absolute pleasure and it's lovely to meet you. Why don't you kick off by telling us about your role here? What is it you actually do?
Well, recently, just before Christmas, actually, Maidstone Borough Council purchased a long-term lease of Maidstone House, which is a multi-storey office block in the centre of Maidstone. And the reason we purchased it, we've been tenants here for a number of years, very happy tenants here for a number of years. And when the investment opportunity came up, we snapped at it. So it, for us, it's an investment. It's to bring economic development into Maidstone. It's to keep it as an office block, and also enabling us to work with our Business Terrace tenants, who are our tenants who tend to be new startups, and then able to move them on so they remain within the building.
Cool. Well, let's kind of deconstruct some of that. So I wasn't aware that, I always assumed that Maidstone Council owned the building in the first place, but obviously not. But you do now. So give us an overview, if you would, Alexa, of how much space there is, you know, what kind of size the building is, how many floors and all that kind of stuff.
Well, we've got six floors and each floor is 12,000 feet. Wow. So it's big space. Yeah. We were occupying three of the floors, but as is most businesses, including local authorities, we've downsized. So we have a number of our workforce who work from home, maybe the majority of the time, maybe coming into the office one or two days a week. So what we've done is we've condensed down to pretty much to 1.5 floors. Right. Which now means we've got some vacant space that is up for rent.
Fantastic. So you've got the council using a small portion of the space, and now you're doing lots of innovative things with the rest of the space. So one of them being the Business Terrace. So tell us all about the Business Terrace.
Well, the Business Terrace was started to support startup businesses, really. That was its focus. So to help, you know, maybe one-man bands or, you know, very, very small businesses. And luckily, we've had some significant growth of those businesses. Yeah. So some of them have moved into bigger offices in the Business Terrace, and some have actually moved into the main building. So we have two tenants, InTech and Creation, who are on the third floor at Maidstone House and have taken up big space there. So that's what we hope to do. We hope to grow businesses. We hope to support businesses when they first start and then encourage them to expand and then hopefully keep them within Maidstone House.
Absolutely. So I love that. So you've got this progression through the premises, basically, where, you know, coming right back to the basics here in the terrace, you've got hot desk space where you can rent a desk. You've got small office pods and then you've got slightly bigger office units. And then if you really go mad, you know, full Del and Rodney and become multimillionaires, you can move up to a whole floor in the rest of the building.
Exactly. It's really nice because it enables us to keep relationships with the businesses. And then the businesses that have grown can then support the new businesses. So it benefits everybody, really.
Absolutely, and it keeps them in the Maidstone area, you know, because one of the problems, I own a business in Maidstone, and many, many years ago when I first started up, there wasn't a huge amount of office space. If you needed to relocate, quite often you had to move away because there wasn't anything else available.
Yeah, exactly. And we're seeing a growth in the demand for office space in Maidstone because a lot of the companies are moving out of London now with home working, and they're looking for sort of regional bases. And because Maidstone House is in the centre of Maidstone, it's got good parking, good public transport, two stations within walking distance and a bus station actually underneath. Yeah. You know, it's great. And it's also great for staff because you've got the shops, you've got, you know, the town centre on your doorstep as well. So nice for lunches and drinks after work as well.
It's funny you should say that. My office is in Maidstone High Street, and we've quite often, we pay quite a lot of money in rent for that, and one thing and another. And every now and again, I said, you know, we ought to move. And they went, whoa, it's really handy for the shops and the restaurants, you know. So there is a big, you know, it's one of those things that people like, isn't it? And as you say, one of the great things about Maidstone House here is you've got parking. There's a public car park on top of the shopping mall. There's parking, there's a bus station, there's all kinds of transport opportunities. And it's not actually a very difficult place to get to.
No, it's not. But it's great. And it boosts, and also having businesses here boosts the local economy in terms of the retail and the hospitality trade.
Yeah. And retaining them in the borough, which is always useful. Cool. So how do you see things unfolding? What's the future? Where are we going with this?
Well, we've got two floors that we have vacant at the moment. One of them could be a public sector hub, so we're talking to some of our public sector partners about that. But the other one, we're looking at small offices, so we're looking at 1-3 man offices, so a bit like a kind of business center, and we're going to be developing that over the next few months. So if any of your listeners are interested, you know, get in touch. It's a good time to do that now, because we are starting to recruit tenants to those spaces.
Cool. And do you know on what kind of basis you would do that? What I'm asking here is, because I know because of my own businesses, that people are very wary about signing long leases these days on business premises. And the big call at the moment is on flexibility, easy in, easy out.
Yeah, we're really happy to talk to people and talk to businesses about their individual needs. You know, we're quite flexible. Some people want longer term leases. They want that security, especially if they're going to spend a lot of money on improving the space. Others want, you know, very short term contracts. So we're going to be flexible.
Yeah, it's been interesting. One of the things, I own a community workspace in Canterbury. One of the things we saw when everybody started working from home, people were going, oh, you don't need office space. And then, of course, the dear old gas and electric prices kicked in, and everyone went, oh, I'm not working from home. No, I'm going to use your gas, not mine.
Yeah, we are seeing a bit of that. But also, it's nice for people to come into a workspace and get out of the house, meet people, network with other businesses as well. But yeah, I thought that the landscape of offices has changed completely. I mean, we didn't foresee it, did we? We didn't foresee the pandemic. But everybody, all landlords are having to be very flexible and think things through differently.
Without a doubt, you're absolutely right. And it's interesting how quickly these things have changed and how quickly people have adapted to what's going on.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's had a major, major impact. I mean, it's had a major impact on the housing market in places like Maidstone as well, because people now don't need to be in London. So they're looking at coming out and having a better quality of life, better quality housing, more space. And then they're looking for places locally to work from as well.
Absolutely. Like a lot of places in Mid-Kent, there's been quite a lot of new house builds. And there's still, I live in Tenton, and I was driving in this morning and I'm thinking, blimey, I remember when that was a field and when that was strawberries or that was a golf course or whatever, and all of a sudden there's big housing estates. We're desperate for housing in the UK, especially in the southeast of England. How do you see the commercial property market in Maidstone growing from here? What's happening? I know there's you've got an innovation centre up on Kim's and things like that.
Yeah, the innovation centre is specifically for organisations that have a medical base to it. So that was the criteria for the building and the funding. We're seeing recruitment market is growing. Yeah. So a number of our tenants who are looking to grow are actually in the recruitment market. And then modern technologies, digital technologies, but also entrepreneurs. I mean, there's a huge growth. I mean, there are a lot of very creative people who worked for other organisations and were maybe furloughed or made redundant during the pandemic and actually starting up their own businesses. So, you know, I think there's a lot of growth, but it may be in different areas than we've seen before.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of the things you offer at the Terrace, isn't it? It isn't just space here. You offer mentoring, support, funding, advice and all kinds of things.
Yeah, exactly. And not just through the Terrace, we organise events as well. Our economic development team, so Rachel and Alex here, we have business seminars, networking events. But yeah, we have Chris, who's a business advisor. She's able to sort of advise on the financial side. We run training courses on social media, just basically any sort of things that businesses need to help them grow.
Fantastic. So do you think there's scope for more commercial property in Maidstone?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I think some of the big office providers will be looking at Maidstone. It's one of the areas that has been earmarked as a good growth area, and it can only benefit the local economy. So it's win-win, really.
I'm going to say this. I don't expect you to comment on this at all. But one of my favourite buildings, which I've hung my nose over quite a few times and nothing ever happens with it, and I know there's some reasons why, is the old post office in King Street, which is a fantastic building, or it was, or it used to be. It's kind of breaking down a bit now. It's a shame that I can think of so many things I could do with that.
Yeah, it is a big empty building, and we've got the Marks and Spencer's buildings, which lots of people talk about as well. And again, it's about thinking differently. You know, we are looking, Maidstone Borough Council is looking for different things to invest so that, you know, we become more financially independent, and maybe small retail is the way forward. Yeah. But yeah, we have got some empty spaces, but the high street's changed. It's changed a lot. We're working with our, you know, partners within the businesses in Maidstone to look at what Maidstone Borough Council can do to support that.
Absolutely. I mean, I have to be honest, that Maidstone isn't as bad as a lot of town centres in terms of empty property. It's just that particular one excites me, and there's nothing you can do. I did attempt to make an offer on it a few years ago, and there was some issues with some of the things that are behind it. So BT have got a lot of equipment in there, and they didn't kind of like it because the building's owned by the GPO pension fund or something. Yeah. Maidstone as a place is pretty thriving still, and there's not that many empty properties in and around.
No, it's not. It is. You know, we're lucky. We're fortunate that we're getting investment, even in the high street. You know, where we've seen some of the big retailers go, small retailers are coming in. So no, it's a great. It's a thriving place. It's a great place to socialise. I live in the centre of town, so I'm really lucky. Okay. So I have lots of places to choose to eat and drink. Right. But yeah, it's all very positive, and what we're doing here is, you know, going to benefit the area.
I think you're right as well. I mean, that mixed economy in our high streets and town centres is the way forward. Yeah, you get people living there, they'll you know, the footfall will work for the coffee shops, the restaurants and hairdressers and all the other service-based businesses that are taking over from some of the bigger retailers.
Yeah, we are fortunate. We're fortunate because of that. It is thriving, definitely.
Alexa, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much. We love the Business Terrace here and what you're doing here. It's fantastic stuff. Keep on keeping on what you're doing, and we'll go from there, and everyone's going to grow. So thank you for joining us on the Business Bunker Show, and we'll see you again soon.
Thank you very much. Take care.
So that was Alexa Kirsten Woods of Maidstone Borough Council, property manager, talking about the Business Terrace, co-working space there in King Street in Maidstone.
I noticed there was another co-working space opening up in Tenterton.
There is.
Called, had a great name.
Trading Post.
Yeah, I love that name.
Trading Post Tenterton.
Is that because the building is an old trading post?
Almost.
It sounds like a Western, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Do you rock up and hitch your horse on the rail?
I can explain.
I'm all ears, Paul. Good. Andrews.
Right. The place itself has always been called the Trading Post, and it was an army surplus supermarket.
Oh, lovely, with all those khaki boots and things.
Yeah, and all that stuff. That closed about 20 years ago. And it was a refurbished Victorian radiator factory.
Really?
Yeah, called the old radiator company.
Mm-hmm.
That closed. And it's now been demolished, and there are four brand new business units on there.
Nice.
Yeah, so they're new. They're brand new. But we decided to keep calling it the Trading Post because that's what everybody knew it as anyway. Mm.
So do they rent the space or do they buy it? Did they buy their premises?
They being whom?
These four businesses.
No, they're four business units, okay?
So they're rental?
Yeah. Get a word out, woman. I run the business park, yeah. Along with my business partners, Andy and Fiona, who yeah. own the site. Mm-hmm. Okay. We have built 4,500 square foot business units.
Yeah.
Unit one is hot desking and co-working.
Cool.
Unit two is offices, small office pods and offices and stuff like that. Unit three is whatever you want it to be. You
cafe?
Don't interrupt.
I'm dying to know.
Unit three. Well, wait until I get to the end and then you can ask questions.
Banana shop?
Unit three is whatever you want to make it. So it's just an empty unit. Unit four is a cafeteria, gym, and workout space where there's yoga classes, Pilates, mindfulness courses, and stuff like that.
So quite big units then, if you can fit that in.
They're 2,500 square
feet. Because if I stretch out doing yoga, I need at least 6 foot.
They're 2,500 square feet each.
Great.
So there's 10,000 square feet on the site. Loads of free parking, easy to get to. It's on the A28.
Fab.
And it's all very nice.
Very good. It's, yeah, I saw that on Twitter and I was going to ask you about it. There's a hotel chain being behind one of Kent's most recognisable seaside hotels and it's been rated the worst
in
the UK.
For 10 years running.
What are they doing? Yeah, is it like,
read the rest
is it like Basil Fawlty?
Yeah, read the rest of it. It's funny.
It's the Britannia Hotel and they own the Great Burstyn Hotel in Folkestone, which I'm trying to remember. It's a beautiful building, isn't it? Like a big one on the seafront, Victorian, am I right? Or is that
no, it's it is on the seafront, but it's
is it on that corner?
Yeah, it's a horrible building. It's 1960s horror.
Oh yeah, it looks like a bit like a ship.
Yes, it that's
it looks
one.
Like an old
a cruise ship.
Yeah, looks exactly, and it is really awful. Yeah,
it's horrible. Yeah.
Okay, because I was there with my new husband once walking and I said it looked like a cruise ship. So this is the Grand Burstyn, owned by Britannia Hotels in Folkestone, and they've earned the unwanted accolade of a decade-long run propping up the table in the annual Which Consumer Survey. And the Burstyn, which overlooks Folkestone Harbour, is rated 2.5 out of 5. You need to go wah, wah, wah on TripAdvisor and is popular with coach parties from across the UK. Why? Why would it be? It has previously been dubbed Britain's worst hotel, but for many regulars, it offers a cheap and cheerful destination for a seaside break. I'm going to try that out, Paul Andrews. I'm going to go there.
You see, isn't that funny how things work? For 10 years, it's been the worst hotel ever.
Yeah.
Yet people go there to experience it's having the worst hotel.
Yeah. So in what way is it worse? Is it the staff? Is it the management? Is it the food? Is it the dirty?
I've no idea.
I mean, I need to know. I need to go there.
Well, the trouble is, everyone's got to go there to find out why it's so bad.
I tell you what, it was very sad, actually. I walked to my lovely local, you know, the old Net where I took you once?
Yeah.
After a lunch. And I think we stayed there till about 3 a.m, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
But the Old Neptune is a great pub on the beach in Whitstable. And I took my new husband there for a luncheon with the dog, Darcy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's Shepherd Neame, which is not my favourite, but it's a great pub. And, you know, you cannot lose on that location. Mm. And we both had a fish pie and it was really mediocre.
Was it?
It was so sad. It was about $13.95 or something. And it was so underwhelming, Paul. It came in this little sort of dish, oven dish, and it was small,
yeah,
like two hands. And it was a little bit overcooked. The cod was a bit chewy. The prawns were a bit chewy. It was underwhelming. And beside it were like, it was like frozen carrots and peas, like, you know, really.
Yeah.
And we both looked at it, and you know, because it was a date, me and the new husband, we didn't say anything. We're very sweet.
This is so nice.
Yeah, we ordered another Guinness and we didn't say anything. And then afterwards, when we finished, we both said, not having dessert here. Then we went to Whitstable Produce and I got some ginger cake, which was really delicious from Steve Whitstable Produce. But then when we walked home, I said, that was horrible, wasn't it? He said, yeah, it was awful. It was really, really just underwhelming.
Yeah.
And I was sad.
Yeah, yeah.
Sad. If you'd ordered fish and chips, it would have been fine. But anything else?
I suppose someone posted, there's two things I'm going to tell you very quickly because we're almost out of time. Somebody posted yesterday, is this traditional British food, fish and chips? And what it was, a plate with some tuna fish and some Pringles.
How weird.
You see what I've done? No, they were taking a mickey.
I can imagine.
And
no cook.
Yeah, just talking about being the worst, I saw something on TripAdvisor and it said, come along and experience our roast lunch. It's the worst roast lunch he's ever had, according to Mary from Scunthorpe. So you need to come and check it out. So people are starting to use this kind of reverse as a reverse marketing thing, aren't they?
Yeah.
Anyway, very quickly, I need to tell you because we're at the end of the show.
I don't know where that show went.
No. Thursday, the 19th of the 17th of November, 10 till 2, is the Swanley Business Expo. Breakfast networking starts at 8:30. The show's opened by Laura Trott, MP. There's loads of business topics and 40 local businesses. It's taking place at the Alexandra Suite, St Mary's Road, Swanley. That's on Thursday at 10 o'clock.
And Tenterden Chamber, big hello to you guys. You can find them on tenterdenchamber.org. They are monthly networking meetings promoting businesses in Tenterden, St Michael's and the local area. And I'm sure they have the best hotels in the area and food.
It's that time again. It's the 44th running of the business show at the XL Centre in London. It's taking place mañana, tomorrow and the 17th of November. The 2022 edition of the business show is set to be the biggest yet, with over 750 exhibitors, 200 interactive masterclasses, live panel debates, speed networking, over 200 seminars covering everything you need to know to start or grow your business. If you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/calendar, you can find out all about it and book your tickets for tomorrow and Thursday at the XL Centre in London.
Yes.
You can do one more.
Okay, so there's a preparation for the Christmas season, and due to the high levels of stress we're all currently operating under, they're running two seminars. Who is this? This is Gemma at ghconsulting.info, Gemma Harris. Mm. So Gemma at ghconsulting.info. She's offering a 60-minute seminar on self-care on Saturday the 3rd of December at 12:30, and a 30-minute session entitled Embrace Your Uniqueness on Saturday the 10th of November, and both health sessions are on Zoom. If you'd like to attend, please let me know and I'll put you on the list and send you the Zoom invite. So that sounds good.
Fantastic. We've reached the end of another show.
Where's it gone?
I know, it goes really quickly.
We only have elephants and pink flamingos in this.
Exactly, and buckets. I want to say a huge thank you to the lovely Phil Wilson, drummer and percussionist with his Junk Jam initiative, which is really, really brilliant and loads of fun. Do get involved. I want to say a huge thank you to Pam Locke of Locke Associates, HR lawyers and wellbeing specialists, and to Alexis Kirsten Woods of Maidstone Borough Council. Thank you all for being part of the show. To my gorgeous co-host, the lovely, stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin. We'll be back with another show next week. Bye for now.